Hello, and welcome to the Cupicorn Games Podcast and my cat in this room.
No, it's my cat.
I don't see any cats in your room.
My name is Dustin Morbido. This cat is Schrodinger's cat. Don't look at the box. It might not really be in there, or it's dead or something. Damn. I forget. Anyway, joining me and the undead cat in this room, wow. Lorraine Morbido is here.
So they say.
How's it going?
Cold.
Yeah, I know. Which is funny because, like you said, the vent wasn't open in this room. I should remember to at minimum come open it up before we come and mess around in here. Mm-hmm. But it was pretty nice out today. Like the outside temperature wasn't too bad, but now the sun's gone. It's chilly again.
Rip.
Joining us in a room that is some temperature, Kyle McGrath is here.
Absolute zero. Wait, that's impossible.
That's like one degree you stay well preserved. It's I'll never die as long as I am constantly frozen.
Detach my head and thaw me out in 1,000 years.
That's right.
On it. I'll set a reminder on my phone.
How's it going? How are you doing?
I've got some bad news. As of about 4 o'clock today, the Detroit Lions were eliminated from playoff contention.
No!
Wait, as of today? It took till
as of today.
They went
like
14. 12-1-1 or something, and that's how
they
long it took.
They won a game?
They did win a game.
Fuck.
They won a game.
Sorry.
Damn it.
I would have liked to seen like the Vegas odds on that. It would have been pretty funny.
Uh-huh.
But it had to have been like literally every game, you know, from here for the rest of the season would have had to go a specific
way. Is that just because the NFL is so small? Like there's so few teams that you could just go like 0-1 million and still maybe make the playoffs?
On some level, I think, you know, they take the top 7 from the conference of 15-16 teams. So the top the cut line was low enough. So.
Right. Which, you know, I'm sure they would have made an impressive run considering how the rest of their season is gone. But
uh-huh. Sure. Impressive.
Man, that's funny.
Maybe next year.
Maybe
yeah,
never.
Maybe.
Maybe never.
Maybe never.
What's the over-under on their ELO?
Oh, the Lions ELO is real bad.
How much ELO did they gain from that win?
That's not really a thing. I'm surprised there isn't more ELO of professional sports.
It's probably just because the lineups change so much that like
there's maybe no consistency.
Yeah, that like the composition of the team is so variable over like season to season.
That they all have their own metrics for these things that they use.
Right.
Sort of stands in for ELO.
Sure. I mean that's kind of what from my very limited understanding of it, that's sort of what the whole Moneyball thing was in baseball, right? It was just
more or less.
It was trying to min-max the distribution of the skill across the team, not necessarily just go for the biggest stars you could get.
I mean, that was it, Moneyball was more about spending as little money possible to put out a okay team on the field.
Well, sure, but right, that's what I'm saying, as opposed to like spending your whole budget on like one dude who hits home runs,
right.
You know, spend
right.
it
if
on like
baseball on a budget.
Right, spend it on six dudes who can get hits sometimes.
Right. Yeah, that's actually.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense.
Delightful.
But
it's a good movie though.
Yeah, right, that movie was entertaining and Bobby Kotick is in it, which is the worst thing about it probably.
No. It's got Chris Pratt, which is maybe the best thing about it.
Oh, you mean Mario?
Yes,
and Garfield. He's gonna be Garfield.
Mario's
too.
And Garfield's Chris Pratt. Star of Moneyball. He's a more supporting actor. He's like one of the players.
Hey, he was a washed up baseball for baseball.
Right.
Yeah. He was one of the people they picked up for that movie. It's like, yeah, you're cheap and you'll be functional. Like
Star Lord, if you will.
Right. Right. Yeah, that whole movie is just economics. Like you're more valuable than your price tag, because basically every player they recruited for that team. It's like you provide it's really the core of capitalism, Lorraine. Is that you'll cost us X, but you'll net us X plus 3. So
I'm going to assume the same can be said for me in The Crucible, because like I'm out there capping zones and maybe generally putting up a positive KDA, but I'm not like, I'm not running out. I'm not 50-0ing anybody.
Your wins above replacement are massive.
I don't, I'm not the star of the show, but I do the work. I put Anarchy on a zone and then cackle like a maniac because it's hysterical every single time and it's never going to get old.
Oh, it's okay.
I'm a comedic investment.
Also has value.
Yep.
Doesn't show up on a stat sheet.
It doesn't. It's tragic.
Mm-hmm.
You can make people quit games by putting Anarchy down and confusing the hell out of them. Then it gets captured and immortalized on streams, and it's still the funniest thing I've ever seen.
Oh, man.
It doesn't take long to reload a bow.
This has actually been a better intro than I would have expected, honestly, because...
You're welcome. I thought you would appreciate it, because I knew what the subject matter we were going into.
Speaking of Destiny and...
shady practices.
And despicable people and extracting surplus labor from the people you employ. We're going to talk about a lot of Destiny stuff today. We'll start with the bad and then work our way to the much, much better bad real life, good game things. But,
Destiny 2, bad real life, good game things.
After the final shape. That as a tag. Yeah.
But yeah, as the world continues to turn and
fantastic.
To the surprise of
and
no
burn.
One,
yeah,
to the surprise of no one that has more than two brain cells to rub together.
Bold of you to assume I have two.
Companies
Mike might have them.
Private corporations, Lorraine.
Wow.
Public ones too. Whatever, you know. Institutions held by people that own capital treat their employees not so awesome sometimes.
You don't say.
Never
would have guessed.
And by sometimes, I mean
all of the time.
To some degree or another.
Uh-huh.
Like, it is not a factor of if, it's a factor of how much and for how long.
And when.
Right?
On a scale of one to Activision, how we doing?
I wouldn't be comfortable putting a number on it, but it's at least not that bad.
I'm not asking to.
Yeah. Right. I know you weren't actually asking that, but I wanted to state it anyway.
I'm making a joke about a terrible thing.
Yes,
wow.
Right.
We're good at this.
Yeah, so and it, as things have continued to roll out, there was a big write-up on IGN this week about the working conditions of some of the employees at Bungie. Basically, this was from the era of like 2011 to 2021. Like these are the people they talked to that either are currently still working there or had worked there in that period.
Was that while they were under Microsoft still?
No, this would have been all... This would have been from the Activision era.
Okay.
On because Halo Reach shipped in 2010, so this would have basically been through Destiny's entire like development cycle to date.
Mm-hmm.
Like there might have been some light pre-production,
whatever,
while they were making Reach still, but but for the most part, this is the entire Destiny era of Bungie we're talking about here in terms of like where it lands on the timeline, but. But yeah, that was, and so this all started off, and we talked about this, I believe, to some extent. I know we talked about it amongst ourselves. I don't remember for sure. I feel like we probably talked about it on here a tiny bit, but in late September, when the shoe dropped on the Activision stuff, which is, you know, unspeakably horrifying, there was a big, at that point, there was a big write-up thing from the CEO of Bungie that was like, you know, here's all these good things we've done today.
We'll never do that.
Right.
Yeah.
It was like, here's all the actions we've taken so far. And it's like, and in that moment, I was like.
That's sketchy.
Some amount, right. And again, this is like, take it as a given that any company is mistreating people to some degree. It's just
especially
literally true.
In the game industry.
Yeah.
Like,
especially as you grow beyond 20, 30 employees.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And we'll get to that too, Kyle, because that's a really excellent point. But, yeah, they basically just outlined a bunch of stuff that they had done to try to make the working there better.
Mm-hmm.
And the one upside of this article is that from the people speaking who are currently working there, it does sound like some of the stuff is manifesting, if like extremely slowly, like unlike the Activision situation where the first thing that Activision did was like, they were like, there's no problem.
Yeah.
And to date, they're mostly still just like, shut the fuck up and don't ask us about this shit. At least the Bungie response, both this initial one, when it was like the Activision story, and it wasn't specifically related to Bungie, and then this recent thing that's come up a couple of days ago, which is recording this on the 12th. I think the article went up on the 10th of December, the year of our Lord 2021.
That sounds right.
But the Bungie response has been a much more reasonable, like, all right, we fucked up. We're not, like the Activision response was like, these people are liars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the Bungie response was like, these stories are true. Things have been not good at the studio to various degrees at various periods of time. Mm-hmm. And trying to make them better. And it sounds like from a lot of the people who are working there now that, like, you know, things ain't perfect, but they are improving, which
That at least could have been seen from, like, a very easily, like, on the consumer side very easily just because of how they've been more open in delaying the releases of their bigger expansions. Like, with Beyond Light and now also Witch Queen, they have, like, gotten out front of that a little bit and been like, hey, we need more time. We're pushing this back.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something a lot of companies don't, like, come out and say, especially not so directly like that.
Yeah, that's a really good point, too. And Lorraine, we'll come back to that in a second.
Let's get bad. Let's go.
I just want to start with, well, I'm not going to say every little thing, but I just want to, like, when the scope of the Activision thing was, like, you know, we're talking, like, I don't know if this, content warning for the next 30 seconds.
Here we go.
We're talking, like, actual, like, sexual assaults and, like, driving people to suicide through just, like, mental torments.
Yeah.
Like, about as despicable as you could get. And the Bungie stuff is much more just in the realm of, like, just malicious workplace. Like, whatever the worst work experience you've had, it's probably worse than that. But not necessarily to, like, an illegal sense. Just, like, how badly can you mistreat people you work with? Well, that's about as how badly they treated people. Which, you know, is not good. And it's not acceptable.
Yeah.
But it's not quite criminal in the same way that that some of the other things that have happened at some of these other studios, like Activision and Ubisoft and some of these other places have been. But still, some of the specific stuff was just there were people. A lot of this came from the narrative team, apparently.
Hmm.
Like, there was a lot of conflict there between people who had been at Bungie for a very long time and newer. More diverse people who are trying to come in and, you know, become part of that team. Like, there's a lot of descriptions of people, like, screaming at people and throwing shit across the room and just taking people off of projects, like, off of specific projects because they weren't, like, quote-unquote good enough at the game to, you know, be writing dialogue or lore or whatever.
So that's how Curse of Osiris happened.
Well, see, that's Lorraine. It's...
oh no, am I right?
Well, no, that specific issue is like that. The Curse of Osiris thing is brought up specifically as a point of toxicity within the team because the people who were trying to basically what appears from this write up, the people who are trying to maintain control of the narrative direction of the game at all costs at the expense of people who are coming in with new or different ideas. Like, that was one of the main things they even did in the early part of D2's history was that, like, there was, a big Reddit blow-up when Curse of Osiris came out. I don't even remember this because I wasn't playing Destiny actively at that point. Like, I played when it dropped, and then I didn't really play the expansions until much later, like, those early expansions. Like, I didn't play any of that stuff until Forsaken came out, pretty much.
Same.
But, yeah, apparently there was a big blow-up on Reddit where people were, you know, doing the death threat. Like, these three women or whatever are responsible for why this product is not good. And people within the team, within Bungie, would, like, take screenshots of parts of threads and forward them around the company and be like, see, it's because of these ladies. Like, this is why people don't like our video game. And that is just, like, so malicious and horrifying.
I'm just gonna come out and say it, like, fuck men. Just, like, kind of as a whole. Yeah. Like, base model dude sucks.
I don't doubt that those things happen, but I don't remember them being, like, major focal points of, you know, either conversations or, you know, Reddit threads. I'm sure that whether they were on the back page or even towards the bottom, whatever complaint of the week was being posted around the time. But,
sure.
Like, it wasn't the consensus among the community. Oh, yeah.
Well, no, yeah.
The team is bad, and it's the women's fault.
It's always that, like, that one squeaky wheel, though, that can really, like, drive a nail into, like, anything.
Yeah, and like
that was
I said,
a terrible metaphor, and I apologize for that because it didn't make any sense.
Right, I personally wasn't engaged with the game at that point. I truly was not. I was not actively playing Destiny 2 when this when this went down. But to springboard off of what Kyle's saying, the big issue there, it really doesn't even matter how much of the community what volume of the community reacted that way or whatever. The big issue there is, even if it was just one person, if it was like one single commenter on Reddit that had that take, if you're going to be within the studio, within the company making that game, and you're going to pick out that kind of criticism and use it to throw your coworkers under the bus, like that is despicable.
That's the shitty thing that I see here.
The Reddit thing, that's going to happen to any product ever, because humanity is terrible.
If you create anything and put it out there, you're going to find someone who will call you the N-word because you did it. Like, you're going to find someone who will treat you poorly.
Saving the receipts of that and, like, just smearing your coworkers.
It's that
kind of
stuff that is rife. Like, that's really the case throughout this whole thing. It is people... Let me tell you,
it wasn't the story that made Curse of Osiris bad. It's Mercury. Mercury sucks, and so does Brother Vance. I'm glad he went into the Infinite Forest, and I hope we never see him again.
Uh-huh. But again, forget that. Like,
post tweet.
Kind of step back from that. If the content is bad or whatever, like I said, but in a functional, healthy workplace, you should take your wins together.
Yeah,
and
you
take
don't
your,
point
take
fingers.
Your losses together. Right. It's like, look,
a video game is a team effort.
We did our best.
Did we?
This didn't come together, or like, look, you tell people that to keep them working on the next thing. but we all tried, we tried very hard, and it didn't work out this time. Like, it's like the Lions tell themselves that every game, Lorraine. They're like, look, we all tried really hard and we lost by 80. So we gotta go back out there next Sunday and do this shit again. So, prepare yourself. But but that's like, you have to do that, like, to be a collaborative, like,
you have to own what you did,
right? Like, you just have to share the wins and the losses, and the cases in here are all basically about people who are already in positions of power and want to maintain their control over one part of the game or the other,
by
just
putting,
like,
down everyone else
just
who,
like,
isn't in line with their vision,
beating people down to the point where they just can't resist anymore in terms of
anything,
and just like pointing fingers directly at specific people that you disagree with, being like, well, if there's something bad about this, it's her fault or their fault or his fault or whatever.
She wrote that wizard came from the moon, fire her.
Did write that.
It's a lot of stuff like that. So, like, I said there were people like people who were high in the narrative team who were at various points infamous for shouting and just throwing shit and being
cute,
generally shitty.
Belligerent.
Yeah. There are people, this is along the same lines of just precisely how you should not work.
Ever.
No matter where you're working, this is precisely how you should not do things. People would write things for like dialogue for cutscenes and stuff like that. And apparently some of the senior people would, take their writing, rewrite it like on the trip to the recording session.
Oh my God.
And then they would lay down, the new edited dialogue track. And when people got, like, people who wrote it originally confronted them about it, were like, hey, why did you just change my work without, like, why didn't we have a conversation about this? They basically were told to, hold on.
He's got notes.
Yeah. They were told that they needed thicker skins and to learn how to take criticism.
Yeah,
which
okay.
The first one is basically just writing off your own shitty behavior, and the second one is contradictory to the thing you did.
Uh-huh.
Like, if you think someone's work was insufficient,
you tell them and make them better.
You have a dialogue about how they can change it in the future. Like, like, this is what I don't like about this. How can we, like, change it or come to an agreement or make it different or whatever? Like, you explicitly do not just change somebody else's work and then not consult them about it.
Yeah.
And then just leave it at that. Like, that is precisely not how to work with people.
No.
And then other stuff about the narrative team specifically was just that, like, coming out of D1, which, again, we know this is true. Like, even before this article, people knew this was true of just, like D1 and many eras of D2 were, like, super crunch-ridden. Like, 60, 80, 100-hour weeks. And I guess on the narrative team specifically, there was this big exodus of people leaving after D1 just because they were so burnt out because that game fucking broke people down. And then as new people came in, they were not hiring people in on a full-time basis at a steady enough clip to keep up with the workload that was still continuing. So basically, the AeroCrunch area has had a shout for years and years and years on end within at least that department.
Because if you're constantly like getting people up to speed only just to get rid of them and bring more people up to speed, and I've been like, on that, you're just in a treadmill.
I've been on the end of that in other professional settings where people quit.
Yeah.
And the people in charge either can't find people or more likely just refuse to cut the checks to get new bodies into seats. Mm-hmm. And they just assume that like the people who are left behind are going to pick up the slack and get it done, which, you know, people can for some amount of time, but eventually, enough is fucking enough.
Definitely.
Again,
none of this is surprising because as terrible as it is, it's such an industry standard for not just narrative, but like all aspects of game design. Mm-hmm. And like, honestly, most digital-ish professions like film, all of that, like TV, all of that has this kind of just toxicity to it.
Yeah. The only other two main things I'll call out, and then we'll kind of segue into it, just a more general conversation, mm-hmm. and then springboard off from there, was we had brought this up a few minutes ago, but yeah, there was somebody on the team who was she was one of the higher people in narrative and trying to basically like, you know, continue up the chain or whatever, like continue getting promoted
as you
and
do
more responsibilities
in
and shit.
Jobs.
And she was denied specific projects because she wasn't good enough at the game. And when it went, and even so, then she requested, she was like, well, hey, can I have some work hours to like, if the requirement of advancing through this hierarchy is to be good at the video game, even though it has nothing to do with the duties that I have in making the video game, can I have time to become better at it? And they denied her that too. which that's like I said, that is pure, that has nothing to do with how good she was at the game.
No.
That was pure like internal gatekeeping bullshit. Cause no one is asking you, like, I guarantee you there are like a half dozen network engineers at least who work at Bungie who are terrible at Destiny 2. No one asked those people, how good are you at first-person shooters? Because that is not their job description. Like, they're not gameplay designers. They're not, like, building mechanics. They just have to make sure that the packets go through.
Yeah.
Like, it is immaterial to the duties that they are performing at that company. And that's the same for narrative, right? Like, those people don't... Like, they don't need to be able to clear all the raids on Master or, like, have a 2.0 KD in Crucible or whatever to write compelling stories or dialogue. It's just not the skill set that they need for that position.
Got picked off one by one.
But it is a way to
watched
like, you know,
wizard
it,
rip the
it,
light
it is a way to separate to separate parts of the team from like here's the in group, here's the out group. In a very toxic shitty
kind
way.
Of crystal. I wasn't gonna stop, Dustin. I missed that strike so much. Rip Savathun's song.
Back someday.
I hope so. I miss Titan.
And then
I'm gonna say it every day.
The last big note I took about just like general shittiness in terms of like total workflow, which again, this is just kind of like stuff that could happen in any workplace. Mm-hmm. But within the narrative team itself, there was kind of an unspoken division between like the high level people and the low level people. Mm-hmm. I'm making air quotes with my fingers.
He is, I see it.
And the people on the quote unquote A team. Were basically the people in charge of like dialogue and cinematics, like the kind of writing that would be spoken by a human in a booth eventually. And people on the B team were the people who were doing like lore cards and like, you know, lore on gear and like text on vendors and shit like that. And so those teams were almost completely segregated for at least some part of Destiny's development.
That doesn't surprise me.
Where the people on the A team would make decisions, and then as they iterated, because the teams were intentionally so segregated where they were basically picking winners and losers over who got to work on what, as they made changes, they forced the people on the B team to crunch even harder because every single thing they had to do was just a like seat of the pants reaction to like, all right, well, if this relationship or this dialogue or this story beat has changed, you know, in this cutscene or whatever, then we have to change all this dialogue and all this other writing and all these other things. And it just like trickles down to like, you know, one change on that team could cause like, you know, a dozen changes on the people below it. which like that's kind of shitty two ways, right? Because it's both like not necessarily equal distributing the creative feedback on the whole endeavor, but then also by not including those people directly in that decision making, you're just making their jobs harder arbitrarily.
Yeah. Everything about it is bad and even worse than ever before.
So that all sucks, but that's about the that's about the scope of it. It's just a lot of traditional workplace toxicity and a lot of traditional just like game dev like grinding people down, you know, to the stump of what they were before. Which, again, like I said, the one silver lining, at least, from this Bungie stuff is that it does appear that things are improving. And like you guys both said before, that Witch Queen delay is a big deal. That's delay your games.
Yeah.
Push them back. It's fine. If it lets people see their families and not sleep under their desks, delay video games. It's okay. But yeah, that's about what's been going on with that. Which and again, there was another big. So there was that big write up by the CEO. Hold on, it's Pete something, I think. Catch that guy's name again. Pete. Oh, that's just his first name. What? Bungie CEO Pete. I'm sure his full name is somewhere at the end of this
Pete
article.
Bungie.
But Pete Bungie. That's right. Pete Aloysius
Pete
Bungie.
Parsons.
Pete Parsons.
Pete
okay.
Parsons.
I knew it was like a comic book character. He was basically like Spider-Man. And then he did another write-up as this article was dropping, because they like went to people at the studio currently in leadership for comment. So like they knew
The IGN article.
Right. They knew what day it was gonna drop and like what was gonna be in it, basically. So they did another write-up just doubling
down. I feel like any time that this stuff happens, they do attempt to reach out.
Well, yeah,
like,
that's true.
And then you'll see in the author's note at the end, it's like, we tried to get comment and they just ignored
us. That's journalism 101. Yeah. It's like you try to get comment and they might not give it to you, but you know. You send an email to somebody or call their office or whatever.
Seeing that they did reply to that and they were engaged, like, does make me more hopeful, because they were willing to like own up and be like, yeah, this happened like all the time, but we're trying.
Yeah. And at the same time, it's just important to there's nobody, like you said, and nobody in any workplace is free of this bullshit. And especially in video games,
I feel like it comes to light a lot more in video games, just because of how fast teams turn over from the crunch. Like, I feel like this stuff gets talked about a lot more, but it is still very prevalent in like every industry.
Yeah. Well, and there's like, look,
thanks capitalism.
Right. It is.
It's a systemic problem. More than anything
else. It is stereotypical and true. Like there is no ethical consumption under capitalism. And eventually someone is going to suffer to make the things that you consume, which is like, I don't say that to say like,
go live
in a mud hut somewhere.
I mean, I'm already like halfway there.
And you know,
mentally.
Eat bugs and like chew grass or whatever. But whenever an opportunity presents itself,
least harm.
And support the people who are at the front lines who are making the thing. Like, you know. At minimum, do just like the little shit, like, you know, treat people at retail and stuff with respect.
Yeah.
And in cases like this, support employees' rights to get more power over their workplaces. Support people in unionization efforts if you can. I know that there's a big there's a strike drive at Activision right now where they're trying to raise money to strike because of some layoffs at Raven Studios. I think
this is like tangentially related, but Kellogg has. Workers have been striking, and the people they hired are like actively sabotaging inside the company. Like the scabs aren't working out.
I hope so.
And yeah, I've seen a lot of stuff about it recently, and like there are just like pictures of store shelves where there's just no Kellogg cereal because it's not getting made and it's not being shipped out. Like a delivery train got derailed. It's just a nightmare. So yeah. Get fucked, Kellogg's.
Maybe don't buy Kellogg's because there might be, you know, cockroaches. And, you know,
that's right.
Other things.
And that, all spit. It's just a sack of liquid.
At least it's close to home because Kellogg's is in Michigan. Like, motherfucking Battle Creek. Like,
I think General Mills, too.
They both are.
Yeah.
Get fucked, really? Kellogg's.
Yeah, right. They're like across the street rivals. They're like the Ford and GM of breakfast foods.
one of them is secretly run by a Nazi.
Which one? Who knows?
That's for you to decide.
Just make sure you contain your urges by eating cornflakes.
Yeah. Well, and the thing here, because like, you know, hashtag not all gamers.
Oh man. Oh God. Here we go.
But the
Lordy, Lordy.
But there is still like it varies from community to community, and it varies from horrible event to horrible event. But there are always a contingent of people who are just like, none of this matters. Just make the game good. And for those people, if you're that kind of
get fucked,
knuckle dragging like swilling your own drool, like
Stasis Stompy's dipshit. Hunter.
That's right.
Yep.
You know the ones.
Your Felwinters is so far up your nose it has damaged your brain.
If you shatter dove your last brain cell away because it's not killing anyone anymore.
In addition to just being the right, good, and proper thing to do, supporting workers' rights is always good for you.
Yes.
It just is. Because if you're... Odds are, you know, 99,999,999 out of like a million people who play video games are laborers. Like you are, whether you're white collar, blue collar, whether you work at McDonald's or you have like a cushy office job, at the end of the day, you are working for a wage from a person who controls capital. So anything that is good for workers is good for the workforce across the board and is good for you. And in terms of creative stuff like video games, anything that gives more power to the people who make stuff, like if the people who are on the ground making the stuff have more say in the decision-making process, you're just going to get better products at the end of the day. Products that you care more about, because the people who make video games, the vast majority of them make them because they strongly care about at least some part of the video game process, whether it's like gameplay or story or whatever. And that is never true of the executive class. Like some people end up getting promoted from within, but across the board, like generally speaking,
you a CEO, you a fuck.
Yeah, most people who get to the highest points of any enterprise, they are beholden to the spreadsheets, and that's about
it. It's the business of business, not the people of business.
Right.
If
so,
that
like,
makes sense, or the business of people, I think is a better.
Yeah.
Way to put
tell
that.
Me which is more plausible. Do you think that people who are writing the narrative and designing raid encounters and, you know, building new guns, do you think those people want to stretch you to the limit in terms of how much content costs and how many microtransactions to put out on things? Or do you think it's the people in the highest suites of the office who make the biggest salaries and who are, you know, the most beholden to whatever financial interests are powering the company, private or public? Like, which of those groups do you think is more going to act in your best interest if they have the most say over a project? So it is a selfish and selfless act to support labor's right to fair treatment and autonomy to some degree. So do it.
Get them.
End of rant, I guess.
Well, when I am a CEO, I want to be sure that I'm in a position to make all the money, so maybe not.
Well, that's the thing, too, is, like, that's the lie that,
the American lie.
Libertarian weirdo who, right, the lie that every person who follows Elon Musk's Twitter account tells themselves is that when I become a billionaire, that's what,
right.
I'm preserving that future for me, for when I eventually own 6 companies, like... No, man, not going to happen.
Once
like, it just
everyone's
isn't.
Everyone's a billionaire.
Quite
then
frankly,
no
it's,
one will
it's
be.
Embarrassing that you think it will. Like,
honey.
that's to me is like the most. If you want proof that, because, like, I can't. I'm pretty
Use
confident
your words,
in the
Dustin.
State. I'm pretty confident in the statement, but I don't have, like, statistics up in front of me to prove it, but. I feel like the vast majority of people who are like goons for billionaires are men.
I'd say that's probably fair.
And if you want to,
if you want proof that
men are just as irrational as women are, like, because those same kind of people would probably be like, well, men are very rational. Like, we just think with our brains and logic, and women think with their emotions and their feelings. Like that. Yeah, if you want objective
true
facts that is not true, look at those same people.
Yeah.
All those NFT swilling cock munchers.
Like, right. Like weird belief in like the quote unquote free market is like the man equivalent of like goop products. It's just like pseudo spiritual, like fabricated nonsense that you tell yourself to make the world try to make some level of sense.
Getting off by the invisible hand.
Shut up.
Got him.
I don't like it.
Got him.
But I think that's where I'll leave at least that part of the discussion there. Do you guys have any other thoughts about any of that?
No. I mean...
Why? Let it in.
That's fair. We will, in fact, let it end. All right.
I mean, it'll never end.
Well, yeah.
Stuff like that is inevitable. It's just how well you can come together as both workers and a company and deal with problems
before
they become ingrained in the culture.
Yeah, at the very minimum,
workplace.
I guess I'll close on this and then we'll move on to the new content itself. Even if you can't, for whatever reason, be asked to like actively support people in their struggles for more equality in the workplace and shit like that, at the very least, just don't be defensive about products. Because like, just because you love Destiny, like we all love Destiny too, it does not mean that anything that has ever happened in result of creating that game at one point or another is justified. Like, just don't do that. Don't be like, well, I like this thing, so it's fine.
You need to be critical of the things you like.
Yeah, if you're right, it proves you like them more if you're willing to criticize them to some degree. Because again, if you'll settle for anything, then like every new season of content in Destiny 2 is going to be one new helmet that's going to cost you $800. like if no measure of, you know, quality or decency or whatever is material to you, if the only thing that matters is like, I already like this thing, therefore I'll give you money for it.
Every season is now a season of the war mind.
So yeah, we'll leave that there and talk about new content in said Destiny 2. Which is like, the timing of this is, you know, it lines up perfectly, I guess. But they have a big 30th anniversary thing in the game now, big event with, there's a new public activity, there's a new dungeon, there's a bunch of new guns.
Old guns, new guns.
Old, a bunch of old new guns. Some of them are new, some of them are
really old.
Or some of them are really old.
Some of them are two halves of one gun that they can't legally
put in the game.
But like
overall, I think it's pretty good. What do you guys think?
Definitely.
I'm still annoyed that they charged us $15, $20 for this or whatever.
Yeah, and I will say this.
Going back to the previous conversation already.
Yeah, 100%. I do not think, in terms of what you get for your $25, I do not think it is super worth it. Like, if you're a lifer enough, like, if you've already committed yourself to buying all of next year's content, like,
why wouldn't
you? I'm not going to hold it against you for buying the big one, because that's what I did. You know, I think everybody here probably ended up doing that.
Bought the Adept big ones.
But that's what that's with the major caveat that, like, at this point, Destiny 2 is both a game we play and a place we hang out in.
Yeah.
Like, it is the way I spend most of my time playing video games these days, so...
It's an upkeep cost.
Yeah. Right, something like that. But in that sense,
it's a subscription to a space, essentially.
Yeah, and in that sense, I'm gonna get my money's worth personally, just because I'm gonna spend so much time engaging with it. But if you're the type of person who is casually interested in Destiny and pops in, you know, every year or maybe just every month for like a couple hours, you should come in and check this out, but you don't need to buy the bigger thing.
Maybe if you haven't bought this previous year and you're just coming to check it out, I would definitely say maybe consider buying it if that's the only thing you've bought, like the 30th thing. Like, if you don't have the current season and you want something more than just the base free to play, some decent stuff in there to do.
But when you consider that in the past they've charged, you know, $10 per season for a season that had, you know, a bunch of cosmetics and sometimes a new dungeon and pretty much always a 6-person PV activity and some amount of narrative content. For this thing, they're charging $25, and what that gets you access to specifically, just the purchase stuff, is some more cosmetic stuff and a dungeon. So you're getting much less for much more money. And some of that other stuff, luckily, is in there for free to play. Like, so the 6-person activity is free, which is good. Like I said, I would definitely check that out just because they're not charging money for it, and it's fun. And there's
a lot
of new gear
and stuff that
you can get for
free. I feel like at one point that might have been bundled in. But they were like, we can't just completely...
Yeah, right. Like, and who knows? We'll never know for sure.
Yeah. It's weird.
But yeah, that activity's fun. Mm-hmm. It's fun enough. It's fun in the sense that, like,
and
all those core modes are
usually okay. There's a lot you can get from it without having to pay for anything. Like, there's a decent amount you can, like, grind for and, like, do in and around that activity specifically without buying the 30th... bundle, the actual paid part of it. They coincide pretty well. Like, there's overlap between them for a reason, but you don't need it to, like, get something new before Witch Queen, essentially.
Am I the only one that had these 6 main activities? They've just pretty much run their course for me. I'm done with them.
I was gonna kind of
I can't remember them all offhand. There's been so many, and they're all basically the same thing at the end.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you.
For a while, but I hope that the next year, especially which one, lean away from these things.
Yeah, I don't want, because like we've got just so, like there's, I can't imagine people doing overrides anymore, like,
right,
or whatever, even the ley line, like, not the ley line, whatever, or the non shattered realm.
But yeah,
activity,
right, it doesn't
like,
matter, because you're both right, they do, they're samey enough that they just kind of blend together in a
do,
slurry,
yeah,
of like
it was
time expending nonsense.
What was
right,
the start?
And then you need to do the thing 69 times for a catalyst or something.
Yeah, that's not awesome.
Come on.
I agree that is probably the worst thing about that all that content, is that for some piece of it they expect you to do that much of that activity for sure.
I'm just trying to look back over the year now, since we have the full scope of this year's, like, the seasons, because it was the Wrathborn Hunt.
The Wrathborn Hunts were okay. Because
that was
terrible.
It was a single-person thing.
But right, there's a thing I could do quickly on my own time.
Mm-hmm. There's, like, no overhead to it. Like, you get the stuff for it by doing other activities, and it doesn't take all that long to get them. And then, was it the Battlegrounds? Was that two?
That was the next one. I might be missing one.
I don't think there was, because I think it was Hunt.
Yeah, it was right. There's
Chosen. Expunge. Not Expunge. Vax, whatever. Who cares?
Yeah.
And then Dreaming City. Yeah, that's four.
Right.
And then now this Dares of Eternity. All five of the activities. Some of which you can do on your own. Like, I do kind of appreciate how there are, like, single player ish modes to most of them, kind of like the Wrathborn Hunts, where it's like you have
like
Expunges and the Shattered Realms, which were both much better than that match made activity, and they got you better stuff, like they were much more worthwhile for your time, even if there were like things you had to do, like the keys or whatever for the Expunge chests, or I don't know if you needed anything for, I can't even remember if you need anything for this season's, like, if you need something for the Shattered Realm or not. I don't think you do.
Oh, like a currency or whatever?
Yeah, I don't think there's something tied to them.
No, I don't believe
so.
Which, like, thank God, right?
I think it's, well, no, there's one for, is there one?
There's that other currency that you just get from doing stuff that I have 8 trillion of, so it doesn't matter.
But you just spend it at the thing.
Yeah, that's just for Engstrom.
You spend it at the, right, at the,
or is it the chest at the end of
to get more specific
playlist activity.
From the
Can you use them there too? I haven't done one of those in a million years, so I couldn't tell you. So who cares?
I don't know, but
Battlegrounds are bad. Battlegrounds.
I mean, whatever. Like I said, they did all that stuff.
Yeah.
I don't think any of it is necessarily better or worse than any of the other ones, with the exception of like how much more manipulative and time sucky they can be, because like I said, like every time they make you use like some other arbitrary currency that you need to get some way to access a piece of content, that's terrible.
I mean, I'm just thinking about Battlegrounds, and like the hammer is one of the worst things they've ever introduced.
Sure, and that's what I'm saying, like as far as the gameplay part goes, it's just, you know,
that,
killing
who,
random
who
junk.
Who fucking cares about that part? But the way to interact with that season's bullshit in particular
is really bad.
Yeah,
it was not good. And again, if they're going to fuck you, in terms of total player engagement, if they're going to fuck you one way or another, I guess I'd prefer to just have it be, you know, a total amount of completions versus like juggling two or three different like arbitrary grinds of like, well, I got to go do playlist stuff enough to power up my staff of looting, and then I need to get 18 loot coins to shove into my loot staff to go loot the chest at the end of this activity. Like,
but then the weekly quest has a step where you have to slot the coins into your loot chest, and if you already had one slotted, you got to do one to unslot it and then do it again, but you might be out of the currency because you didn't get it in the first one because you were maxed out from the last week. Just
I hate that
hammer.
At minimum, the thing with the Dares of Eternity or whatever is like,
just
you,
do it.
You play it, and at the end of the thing, you get a piece of loot from that activity, and then you get currency that is not used to play the activity.
To get stuff tangential to the
activity. Right, it is used to buy other rewards from playing the activity. So if you're gonna have any more of this stupid arbitrary currency bullshit, Do not use it as a way to like to power up a way to play a thing. Just use it as another reward structure. Like, we're gonna give you gear and a way to get more gear. Like,
yay!
Do that. So in that sense, this is better than like the what's it called? The battlegrounds. Or even the expunges, where if you wanted to open the good chests, you needed to grind those other key card things from playing just like playlist shit and whatever, right?
I know that that's just killing anything. Like, so
but
like,
whatever. But
you could get them in the activity, but if you're doing the right expunge, you're not killing a lot of shit in there.
Yeah. And again, you can only do, like, they want you to do a lot of them, but not too many of them, because you can only get those
the
rewards.
The economy, Dustin!
You can only get those rewards three times anyway. So, like, just don't bust people's balls over it. Just let them do their clears or whatever. And
the
like
economy, Dustin. The economy.
Anyway.
Think of the playlist health,
As far as other stuff about the Dares of Eternity, like I said, I do think its length is also okay-ish. Like, it doesn't go on for too long. It's about as long as I want any of these, like, horde mode things to be.
Yeah.
Like, if it were any longer, I would be kind of bummed out about it.
For any longer, it would be an original Gambit
And like Kyle said, there's no excuse for, like, I still don't want to do 69 of them.
No.
But, you know, I'll do some of them, and I'm sure I'll eventually get it at some point. I'm definitely not going to grind for it. But,
at least, like, unlike the Battlegrounds or most of the other activities where you did need more of a currency going in, like, you could just, like, do this while we're shit chilling. Like, it's real easy to just pop in and barely pay attention and get to the end of
it. Yeah, and like I said, there's
as opposed to like juggling like hammer charges and lure charges.
And we had talked about
expunged keys and bullshit.
Phil and I had talked about this with Brian before you guys got on yesterday, because Brian had asked when the 30th stuff was going away. And I assume that that the earliest it will go away, like at the post Witch Queen expansion. Because it's definitely not going away when Witch Queen launches, because they haven't said that.
And I would hope not.
I can't imagine it's going to go away anywhere over that next year, because they can charge money for it.
Yeah.
Because
I'm assuming,
because it'll still be a thing in the store you can buy for $25.
Well, I'm assuming
you
it'll
yell,
just
whore, you better
be
drop down the money.
I was going to say, will it be the Dares 2, or will it just be the dungeon?
I think it'll be both. I think that whole little node will probably stick around through the Witch Queen era. I might be wrong about that.
Because the only thing they can charge you for is the dungeon.
Right.
Dares is just there, so they could just pull that out whenever.
But like Kyle said, you do get Gallahorn in there too, which I'm certain was like
do
their...
Do you get it from... I don't see.
Yeah, you only get that
it
quest from
it literally happened
thing,
on Tuesday, and I couldn't
which,
tell
like,
you
and again,
when
like,
I did
that's
that.
Like the,
you'd already unlocked it. It's hard to distinguish.
Yeah. Of the way that they segregated those guns, like, I know they put Gallahorn in the paid bucket because they just know that the nostalgia hit will get a lot of old hands back. But I'm glad they segregated them that way, because at the end of the day, the Gallahorn is a cool rocket launcher, but it's just another fucking rocket launcher. And the Forerunner, the sidearm that basically emulates the pistol from Halo 1, is like a completely unique, like bespoke exotic weapon that functions unlike any other thing in the game.
It's neat.
So if one of those is going to be available to all players, I'm glad it's that one, because it's like really different. And like I said, the Gallahorn is like, you know, it's better than Eyes of Tomorrow, but it's a rocket launcher that shoots rockets that do a bunch of damage. Like, you know, it is what it is.
I like that all the exotic sidearms are so weird.
Yeah, they are all pretty weird. You're not wrong. Except for Traveler's Chosen. Like, I guess it's weird in its own way, but it's like, in terms of the way it shoots bullets, it is the least weird.
I mean, Rat King doesn't do anything weird with its bullets.
I guess so.
But it's so Chad in every other way. I love you, Rat King.
Here's a question I have about Dares, and then we'll maybe move on to even some other specific weapon stuff or some of the dungeon stuff. Yeah, you got it.
Oh.
How do you guys feel about, like, just how goofy and meta all the dialogue is?
I kind of don't care, because, like...
There's a bit much.
Like, well, because, like, when you go into the first zone, like, you literally can't hear any of it. I don't know if my audio settings are just weird, but there's just subtitles on the bottom of the screen, and there's apparently stuff being said, and I can't hear it. So... I don't really care. I like the horse sounds. I like the horse subtitles. I think that's funny. I personally, I know it's not necessarily related to like the goofiness of it. I adore the horrible sound that happens when a round ends. I love that. It scares me every time. It's a terrible noise, but it's great. You know what I'm talking about?
I think so, yeah.
Oh, it's so good. But yeah. Honestly, like, I don't care. Like, I think it's fine. Like, it's just...
Kyle, do you want to elaborate like, anymore? Because I'm of two minds about it. I think I'm between the two of you. Huh?
But I think they can get away with this case. But if going forward,
you're
going to just take a bonkers, stupid, irreverent tone to everything, I don't think it's going to work.
I'm definitely of the same mind, annoyed, Kyle. By it. But not that way.
And I'm glad, I will say, I'm glad that it's not part of
a narrative.
Like, right. I'm glad it's not part of a quote unquote season.
Yeah.
Because then this would be what we're getting.
I would not be able to stand
instead
that.
Of like a real narrative progression kind of thing, it would just be this kind of silliness, which like Kyle just said, I think is okay in this instance.
Yeah.
But I do, I would not want like
I'm fine
one of
it,
these per season or whatever of like one really bizarre.
Or even just like in a year. Like if there's like maybe if they have to do like
this an supposed to be the unglued set.
Yeah. Right, yeah, 100%.
You can see the seams in the cardboard that's holding this like half season together or whatever. Mm-hmm. But
and if you want to be all right, so let's really get into the weeds.
Here we go.
If you want to be a real lore asshole about it.
Here we go.
Yeah.
Are we to take because in addition to just being a bunch of references from like the world we as human beings who play Destiny exist in, like Xur is also talking about the Paraverse or whatever, which I kind of take if you really want to read into it in like the shittiest nerd way possible. You kind of take that. I take that two ways. The first one is obviously that like all these references to Halo are like from a different reality where Halo is real. And the other one is like, isn't there some small reference? Like, aren't there a handful of fourth wall breaking lore entries? Like, I think some of the Hive stuff like speaks to you, the player. Mm-hmm. Not like a Sometimes, guardian in the game or whatever.
Yeah, there's definitely little bits of that.
Like it's not overt, but like the interpretation is strong.
Yeah, present.
Right. So like that, like
one of the lore books is like a choose your own adventure where you die
at the end of the day. Like at some point, is it going to be revealed that the nine are just like nine random people who work at Bungie? Like they're just literal. It's like Steve from accounting and like you know Tiffany and like
you go maybe. Tiffany
who does level design or whatever. but that was my thought about that. I was like, oh, that's, but at the end of the day, I really hope that, like, that isn't part of the core Destiny narrative, like, in a really direct way.
Yeah.
Like it's just a funny thing more than anything, but, like, I don't want the end of, like, the Light and Darkness arc to, like, do the Assassin's Creed thing and, like, stare into the camera and talk to me as the person who controls my guardian. Like, I'm not really down with that.
You don't want the, like, thanks which Silent playing. Hill was that with the dog ending?
Right. But like sprinklings of that are fine, like just for funsies.
I really do wonder. So I'm gonna like lore nitpick in a different direction. So I remember this horse from the Joker's Wild season.
I didn't remember that at all.
I remember that very vividly from the last cutscene of that nine bullshit you could do with the quests from Xur at the last one that you got of that. Drifter is just in the like end of the prophecy dungeon room with the emissary, and he just turns around and says a horse because there's this fucking celestial horse there, and now it's just here. Like, what does it mean?
It's something.
Why are we gonna learn anything? Because there's no like
someday.
There's no like seasonal lore book that lore I've seen horse. That's attached to any of this because most of the seasons will have like a weekly. Wow. Page that you get doing something.
So.
There's no overarching season quest like most of them have had to get stuff like anything like that. So I wonder, like, did they just pick it because it was something they had no idea what to do with? Is there actually like any kind of anything that's going to come from this, or is it literally just like a this is for the lols moment?
Writers are weird.
I can attest to that.
I could believe it.
It's been on a whiteboard since like the start of D2. I was even a part of Trials of the Nine. There's a horse.
Right. I did see that after the fact that someone had mentioned that this horse was there, but I remember it from that cutscene.
Content. Yeah. I don't remember it at all. So.
That's completely horse out of blind. Nowhere. It's,
right.
It's just weird. I have
horse blindness.
Nay.
Yeah, well, and similarly, so now we can kind of segue over to the dungeon stuff. In the same vein, I actually like, Kyle, I don't know how many of those audio logs would you think you picked up in your run the other day? Like probably just a small handful.
Three or four.
Okay. Because I've gotten most of them. I think I have all but one of them. Like, okay. I
went through and got
one.
All of them. It was me. Wade showed Mike and I all of them while we were getting the Catalyst and the one run we did with him.
Even from the first one of those that you listened to, it's like instantly obvious what the what the arc is. Like by the time you hear them all, like it's like, oh yeah, okay, that's this, which is fine. Like I like the way it was executed.
I liked it.
Yeah, but
I kind of wish there was a lore book attached to that too.
But the one part that I did, the one of those that I didn't really love, which for the same reason as like the Xur stuff is silly to me. Mm-hmm. Like I like the fact that they tried to codify the loot cave concept in a way that does make sense of the universe, but there's one of those audio logs where they went like one bridge too far for me, where that one main
whoever
dude
the
is
guy,
talking. He says like I got that god roll shotgun that Anthony wanted or whatever the fuck the other character's name is that he calls out, and I was like that's too much. That is for me personally, that is one notch too far, and like having guardians talk about god rolls is like no. No,
I mean,
that's stupid.
That's a whiteboard revision. That's like a table read, like, oh, maybe not.
I would have been like, we should dial this back.
I know you don't like a lot of things that are more poignant like that.
I don't think
like
poignant's
anything.
The right word,
whatever.
But it's like it's very self-referential in like the most
irreverent way,
in the most pandering way possible, right? Where it's just like we're doing this for you, the fans, as we point to you and wink and snap our fingers. Like that to me was like a not like for the same reason that I said I don't want the fourth wall breaking thing to break over into the core narrative of Destiny 2, like. Like, keep the real world stuff just far out of reach enough that, like, this all lives in a world that makes sense, at least within itself. Because, like, you know, Guardians getting loot or whatever, that I have no problem with. That's how I would have personally doctored that line of dialogue. I would have been just like, yeah, I got this great gun that, you know, whatever wanted or whatever. Like, just don't make it so on the nose about, like, with community nomenclature about, like, people talking about loot and shit. But other than that, I did like it. Like, I thought those...
Yeah, you said that from that first one on, it's very obvious where everything's going. But I really like the subtle progression of some of them, like watching this guy just
grow more and more
insane.
Like I said, that character
just having a single person read all of them
that,
was very interesting.
That treasure mad maniac is a character you've seen in other media before, if you experienced other things, but it's still well executed. Like you know, he gets more and more verbally deranged as you progress through
the
recordings,
little things
or whatever.
That like pop up in there, the kind of world building ish related storytelling that's in those lines is really cool.
I didn't read them all, so it's fun for me. Just there's one that he picks out. He's just talking about how the guy's doing a lot of work, and he's got to do a lot more now that I killed his ghost.
Yeah, he's like, I forgot how hard it is for like the lightless or whatever.
It's escalated quickly.
Oh yeah, like and put my foot down and hit foot.
But overall, I really enjoyed that. Like that dialogue was fun to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
And the Dungeness thing itself, I think, is good. Like it's not.
It's good.
I wouldn't call it their best work or anything, but it's perfect. Yeah. Again, it's the same thing as like I would be much more two thumbs up about it if it were $10 instead of more than two times that much.
The dungeon is $10. Gallarhorn is $15.
That's right. Yep, you got it.
Yeah.
Dungeon is $10. The Gallarhorn is $10, and just creating the horse was the other $5. Like we would have never had the resources
to make
this horse.
The horse was already there. The horse is in the free stuff, Dustin. The other ornament for Gallarhorn and the sparrow are that extra $5.
Yeah, it's fun. Like it's fun enough. Like it's more engaging than the six man thing, just because it has actual mechanics in it, and they're not like, you know, the most elaborate or whatever. But it is.
It's different. It's unique. Like they're unique mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
When I saw the sparrow part of it, I was just all Scourge and got very happy.
I think there are small parts of it that that show that this was maybe not as rigorously playtested as some of the raid encounters and stuff have ended up being. Because for me, it's specifically, if there's one part of it that I feel like, just like they would have just changed it a little if they'd iterated on it more, it's the pre-boss encounter. We have to shoot yourself over to all the platforms and launch all the things.
It's tedious.
Push a servitor into down a hole.
Right, yeah, because it's right. It is just so tiresome. Like,
but it is extremely funny. I thought that is another part that was just, when I realized that's what they were going for, it was hysterical. Doing it like 5 times, a little much.
Right, I mean, if the physical mechanics of moving that thing around were a little easier, you could pick it up like you would in a portal and just drop it up. Pick it up, drop it off, it would have been fine.
Right, or even if it like, just like...
push it like you would an AFK Guardian.
Yeah, or even if you just advanced around the loop linearly, like, yeah, you got the to the first one and you got to complete like, it, like, the fact that you have to spend, like, sometimes 2 minutes getting to the platform where the thing you have to do is...
You gotta like, get the Scorch Cannon, yeah, I feel you like gotta if, get the
I
thing.
Feel like if there were a little more time just, like, making it more user-friendly, it would have either been that... or they would have tried to make all the cannons so that you could point them to any of the other positions so that, like, from wherever you are, you can immediately launch yourself to the place where you need to do a thing as opposed to, like, going around the
circuit.
Or
they just had, like, one direction. Like, if there was, like, a centralized kind of area that you could... all the cannons pointed to that, and you had one kind of, like, at the end that you can turn towards the one you need and go
but, like,
from there.
Just,
it would have been
better. Just, like, spawning in there and seeing, like, oh,
unless
the
you
first,
can.
The first part
do
of the
you...
encounter is 4 spots away.
Can you... if you take the cannon on the one that shoots it to the bomb, does that just drop you with the center? That last part with the one cannon that goes everywhere?
But the center one only shoots you... I'm pretty sure the center one only shoots you up... or to that other spot where you get that other chest.
I thought you
Gjallarhorn
could just
nonsense.
Turn it.
I don't know. I'm not certain either way, but... yeah, it just feels... it drags
no,
a little.
No, it definitely does. That is the it's kind of a nice, like... if it wasn't as long, it would be a nice little reprieve between, like, the ogre fight, Sparrow Run, and the final boss. Like, it's kind of a little, like, take a breath for a second, but it's a slightly too long breath.
Mm-hmm. And like, listen, the downtimes are just so obvious. Where like, when that happens, it just feels like you're literally doing nothing. Like it feels like riding public transit. It's just like, all right, I gotta
gotta get the A to the B,
catch the G train, and then like to
cross over to get to the
20 minutes
and...
on my phone until I get to the office or whatever. like it's not engaging. It just feels like busy work to hop yourself over to where the next action is. But other than that, I think the enemy encounters are mostly good. Like the two. Bosses are fine. The dunking mechanic is interesting. I wonder if they're going to try to keep that for the future where it's not like a manual input to deposit a thing into a thing, which I think is probably mostly upside for me in that, like, if you do it that way, you can pressure people more with combat still.
Yeah,
like, you can still be, like, defending yourself instead of, like...
It's up two ways, because, like, when you get on the end, the side of Pit, where there was all like those ways to dupe the thing to get around that, or like just input stuff in like prophecy where you pick up the thing and you everything you do gets rid of the dunk ability. Like this way it's just a debuff, you just kind of are there and can be, like you said, immediately still engaged with the combat that's happening around you while also getting rid of these stacks. Like,
Lorraine, I was 4 days ago years old.
Okay.
When I learned that you can use your regular melee ability while you're carrying a Scorch Cannon. Like, you can punch stuff with your other hand if you need to.
I've probably done it. I just, doesn't surprise
me. I don't know. That was just
funny little animation.
Yeah,
very
right.
Halo animation.
Wait.
Oh, speaking of animations, I think my favorite... I think my favorite emote of the like Halo tribute stuff is the one where you're just falling,
like
when Master Chief has been exploded. Like, all right, that's pretty good. You guys got me. That's the Gjallarhorn for me for this.
All
like
right,
that
I
was
and that was free.
Right? Yeah. Like, that's pretty funny. Yeah, I'll give you that.
Or was it in the? I don't remember where it came from. Actually,
you. I mean, I just kind of got it. I don't remember how you get it, but they kind of just give.
I
it
haven't
to
picked it up yet. So I'm...
Yeah.
I haven't gone to the big treasure room full of treasures.
Oh, yeah, right. But, like, yeah, that was pretty good. And I think all the Halo-specific, like, now we can kind of... do you have any other thoughts about the dungeon? Like I said, overall, here's another observation of how I think things are going to be in the future. Even in Master Mode, I think this dungeon is easier than, like, some of the... like, most of the other ones in the past, but especially the base version it's like a snooze in terms of the combat encounters if you've got a fire team. Like, if you're going in there with three people, it is not challenging, which I don't think is a problem. I don't think that's a bad thing, considering that there's at least a step up in difficulty. Yeah. If anything, I just almost wish the here's what I wish the master mode was, which I still think I would prefer this for all of these, like, quote-unquote end-game pieces of PvE content. I wish it was all just like the Nightfalls, where, like, you're going to go in at this amount under the enemies. Like, there's no weird escalation. Incentive to grind your way past the light cap and just make it way easier, because that's both time consuming and diminishes the, like, the tuned difficulty they're trying to go for. Like, just set me at whatever you think how hard this should be and then throw me in there. Because it would obviously be way harder. Like, it's set at 30, 60 or something, or whatever the fuck the values are now. But, you know, I think I'm 4 levels under that or something with the artifact power taken into account. So it barely feels like it's just not that much harder with a fire team. But overall, I think that's like a good impulse. I think having the base version of it be pretty fucking easy, just to let anybody who wants to go in there and do it, I think that's fine. And then, like, yeah, I personally would just like to, I would love it if they were consistent about, like, light capping end game content, as opposed to this mishmash where, like, the raid master mode and now this first dungeon with a master mode have a, like, cap that you can just
get past.
Brute force past if you play a disgusting amount of Destiny 2. and the Nightfalls are not like that, where, like, you have to grind a little bit, but, like, any grinding past, like, you know, the minimum amount it would take to basically compete the season track is essentially pointless. What do you guys think?
I think that'd be fine. You can have the mild difficulty level with the light level for the regular version, and for the hard version, just have it set the way they want it to be tuned. You could have it both ways.
Yeah,
like,
I think
even
having
the Nightfall, the Grandmaster Nightfalls, I'm over the number grind for it. I mean, it's pretty dumb.
Yeah, and Lorraine.
I think having it both ways is the right way to do it, because then you could get, like, the person who's maybe not going to do a master one could get high enough to easily, like, maybe they're also not as good as, like, the base thing. Like, anyone could then, like, you play enough, you go in later, and you can just, you don't have to struggle as hard in that end of it. But I think having a, like, more curating the, like, really, like, the end-to-end hard game content, I think there should be more finesse to it. Like, so it is, it can't just be brute force.
We should have to play for months just to scale up to, you know, hard
right.
mode.
And, at the end of the day, if you make, if you make the base level of it accessible enough for everyone, then, like, I think it's fine if you're excluding people from the really hard one.
Yeah.
Because, like, the only reason that these exist at this point
is for the challenge.
Right. Is to stretch the gameplay mechanics to their limit. Because, like, for the base one, you can roll in there with any loadout and any mods and whatever, and it's fine. You don't need to do anything specific. And, like I said, I think it's good to have that as a version of that content so people will just get to experience it. But, like, when you've decided that you're going to make this other tier that is not necessarily for everyone, like, commit to it. Just, like, get in there, man. Make it make it hard and make it consistent.
Just like my love life.
Something like that. But yeah, overall, like I said, it's an entertaining piece of content that, like, I think is a little overpriced. I do not necessarily. I would have been comfortable spending $10 on all the stuff that you get in there. $25 is a lot to ask, especially if you're a very casual Destiny player. Like I said, I would not recommend it if you play, like, a couple hours of Destiny a week, even. Like, if you play if you play Destiny for 2 or 3 hours a week, you don't need this. Like, you could buy it.
If
but
you're
it's
just
not, like,
getting in now in preparation for Witch Queen, it might not be a bad deal to get them both. Like, that all depends on what you're willing to spend and how much you think you'll be invested for next year. But, buyer discretion advised.
I think we've entered into the new age of, you know, monetizing even larger chunks of the game.
Yeah.
Like, they've already broadly put their flag down. We're going to charge you for dungeons now.
Right. Which also is
they don't just come with seasons.
Not awesome. Yeah.
it's going to get worse before it gets better.
Right.
Because is that included with the big super deluxe version?
It is included with
that. If you buy the
giant.
No, I'm just making sure that I have.
Right. Yeah.
If I have access to the content now,
you buy the biggest bundle you can buy, you get every single gameplay thing that comes out in the next year or whatever. But anything else.
Next year, you'll have to buy the dungeon pack.
Right.
An extra $20.
Yeah, and that's like a, like I said, I would have preferred, again, just a more honest.
Yeah.
Like, if you're going to do that, just change the prices of the seasons then. Like, just upfront show people that this shit is more expensive. Don't just, like, slide in this, like, like, a price increase that you're kind of disguising by not by not being upfront in your marketing that this content that used to come with Purchase X now is in a separate purchase from it. Again, yeah, that's not awesome. So talk about things in Destiny that aren't awesome.
It's just so confusing.
Right, making the monetization just... And the saddest part of all is that, like, since their deal with Microsoft fell through for Game Pass and that's not on that service anymore, that is, while that was in there, it was the simplest way to access all of Destiny. Like, it was all you needed to know. If you had an Xbox and you wanted to do all the Destiny stuff, you could sign up for Game Pass and that would be that. And now that has gone from the most convenient, less confusing option to the least convenient, most confusing option, because now they're going to take it away and all that stuff you used to be able to get, a lot of it is just going to be gone whichever day they flip the switch off to just take it off of that service, and then you have to go buy it all separately.
Yeah.
Which, like, yeah, that's just it.
Poor.
Yeah, everything about the monetization of the content in Destiny is still a fucking confusing mess that they should sort out. Like, again, even take price out of consideration.
Yeah. Oh my god.
Take price out of consideration. There should just be whatever season it is in Destiny, there should always in the store be one bundle that gives you everything in the game up to that point. like just so you can say, like, hey, if you I want to start playing Destiny 2 and I want everything, I just go to the store and buy this. I don't need to, like, look at four different purchases to figure out if
that
I need, like,
season screen is so gross in the Ever store now.
Yeah,
like,
it's super dumb and super irritating. And
I've learned nothing from WoW that's been dealing with this problem for 15 years or whatever.
Yeah,
not smart.
So
it actually made it worse.
Bad vibes.
And then other than that, the other stuff in there that's new other than all that content is, like, a handful of their guns we didn't talk about. Because, like I said, the sidearm is real cool. It's very unique. The battle rifle is, like, just about as unique. Like, in some universe, I almost wonder if that thing was, like, a... Like, right. If one version of it was, like, an exotic, like, like, if it was basically like Dead Man's Tale. Like, if it was a it was a randomly rollable exotic. Because it is its own archetype. So it's a 450 pulse rifle that has hip fire grip, basically, intrinsically. And then it has a handful of unique perks. Like, it is the only gun in the whole game that can roll. And for the moment, based on the text from the TWAB that came out this past week, the only gun that ever will roll that brute force.
The BXR perk.
Yeah, the BXR perk. The one that is a reference to the thing it did in
Halo. It references the name.
Where it powers up your next volley of bullets after you punch something once.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's really well, it's just a really well made, like, it's well made in every way, in my opinion. Like, it's a really cool, it's a really uniquely tuned gun for what it does in Destiny. And it's got that custom scope that, like, you know, it zooms in like Halo does, which, like, I don't know if I love it, but I respect that it's different.
Yeah. I mean, same with, like, the sky or the sidearm.
Yeah. And at the same time, it is a it's a pretty on the nose reference to some Halo nonsense that it, like, in my opinion, like, that's about as much, like, it's not overbearing, because if you don't if you don't know any of that shit about that gun, it doesn't matter.
Well, you don't even notice.
Right, it's it's just another gun that, like, performs uniquely. So yeah, I don't know, I think that thing's really neat. We got our first,
all the guns that came out with are on point.
Yeah, I really like the vast majority of them, for sure. I think the grenade launcher is a little boring, but it's a grenade launcher.
Well,
I mean,
right, grenade launcher is a little boring.
What are you gonna do? The shotgun is at least looks cool. Like, I don't know that it's got any super unique functionality.
The
I feel like there's, like, one weird thing that it can roll.
I hope they all have a unique perk.
Yeah, I don't remember. Most of them do.
I think they do. I haven't gotten into it enough to see them.
Yeah,
there's a legendary trace rifle now.
Yeah, as I say, the legendary trace rifle is real neat, and that thing's got some unique abilities. If that thing rolls golden tricorn, which is, like, a weird...
I think almost all of the 30th ones
can
roll.
It's like
that.
It's like kind of like Rampage plus, like, swashbuckler grenade, adrenaline junkie. Because it gives you a damage bonus for killing a thing with it. And then amplifies that damage bonus and extends it if you get another kill with an ability matching its type while that perk is active.
Yeah, somebody really likes that synergy with matching the
final
guns
with this
your
weapon,
types or whatever.
Grant bonus damage while this buff is active. Grenade or melee kills of the same damage type greatly increase its damage duration.
Mm-hmm. Perpetual and motion duration. Is like, I think, the perk of like, that's just a really solid like general use perk that like they've been doing a lot of those lately, but mm-hmm. I think that's another one where I think people will be pretty pleased to see that roll on guns in the future. It's just very usable. Like its uptime is mm-hmm. almost 100%. So, you know, it's very effective in that sense. But yeah, we got way more of that stuff than I would have expected of like unique.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't have necessarily expected to have any of these guns have any new perks or anything like yeah. that didn't already exist in the game already. So I was pleasantly surprised to see a lot of that stuff. The swords are real cool. which, you know, is even like when you say grenade launcher is boring, swords are usually even more boring. And at least the handful of new perks that they gave those seem real interesting. The one that launches you, like I said, I said this wow. yesterday at some point before some people got on too, but like, I think they're just going to have to nerf that because it is just so, it breaks the movement in the game so completely where you can just whip it out and swing it and travel 40 meters in like 2 seconds. Like it just.
Which sword is that?
The two that are like the two halves of the Halo sword, I think they can each roll it.
Okay.
It's the like, when you pull it out, immediately after you pull it out, if you swing it, it just gives you a huge burst of momentum in the direction that you're facing.
World line plus plus.
Right. Yeah, kind of.
And then I'm trying speedrunners.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, 100%.
Get across the minefield that much faster.
Mm-hmm. Just trying to think what else was in there. There's all those guns. Eyes Luna seems good. It's, you know, that gun is unexciting in its own way, and that, like, it's a really good hand cannon, but... You know, there are lots of really good cannons in Destiny, so I do want a couple rolls of it, but at the end of the day...
The one,
you know,
I got, I believe, is now my Lamonarch pair. I was using it a lot yesterday, and I liked how it felt.
Mm-hmm. People seem to like the Matador.
It's a
shotgun.
One.
Like, that's that's my feelings
like
about the Matador.
The kinetic one that comes from the Dares, because it's so stumpy.
Yeah, well, and like I said, the coolest thing about that one is the visual, because it's got the the Tex Mechanica body.
Right.
So it's like, it's like chaperone in shape, but not in function.
And it does a little like, a little
yeah.
bit.
Oh.
It's just a little guy. I love tiny, cute guns. Have you noticed that my Enigma's Draw has like almost over 3,000 kills? Because it's just a tiny little gun. Give me the smallest one.
The old Derringer over here.
Yeah.
Brass attacks is the greatest personal affront to me Bungie has ever done. Because that gun sucks, but it's adorable.
And then back to the all the way back around to the to that sidearm again. Mm-hmm. I think I'm just really impressed with how well thought out it seems like it is. Like I said, it needs some more time for sure to have people use it a bunch more. But like my base assessment of it is kind of like my initial assessment of Hawkmoon, which I still feel this way about Hawkmoon. Like from when it came out till now, I think it's like it's just an almost perfectly well balanced. Like risk reward kind of thing built into that weapon. Where a Hawkmoon, if you want to get the most out of it, you obviously have to like shoot the mag down to nothing while hitting headshots or whatever. And with that thing, it's just like don't miss.
Yeah,
because it chews through ammo. Like so, the fact that like whoever raised their hand at whatever meeting and was like, "This thing should use special ammo." Was
big
like,
smart.
Yeah,
I mean, it's
like
Ariana's in a way, like. Big bullet,
yeah.
Mean big ammo.
Because like from my experience so far, in like fighting it in PvP or whatever, the best thing you can do against that thing, well,
dodge.
The other thing is you always know when someone's holding it because it's got the scope glint 100%
of
the time.
That's so smart.
So if you peek a lane and you see it out there, just like bait that corner like you would like when you hear a fusion rifle charging up. Because if they let off like two or three shots,
they gotta
and they just throw
at that
shit
point.
Them into the right,
yeah.
They just shit them into the ether. Like you run out of ammo real quick, just pulling the trigger on that thing if you're not killing people and picking up green bricks. But it's a really neat weapon. Seems very cool from the limited time that I've used it. It seems good at PvE too, honestly, because like that the other perk it has that mostly doesn't do anything in PvP. It might never do anything in PvP. It does more damage after you break a shield or whatever. It does a ton of fucking damage when you shatter a shield with it at PvE and just keep shooting a thing. Like it's pretty good.
Neat.
But yeah, I think that's most of my thoughts on that. Do you guys have anything before we potentially wrap this up?
See you in February.
Yeah. Well, that's the last thing, I guess, is that Witch Queen trailer came out. And that's like, of all the things we talked about, it's certainly the smallest because it's just 2 minutes of,
yeah.
you know.
cry
of teaser nonsense, but apparently that stuff was all from the first mission. Like the gameplay content in there was from the first mission of the Witch Queen. According to Bungie.
It's just neat that they went like pretty cinematic with that trailer specifically, though. Like, I feel like they haven't done something like that in a long time. As far as I can remember, like, playing, I haven't seen anything like of that quality put into like a little teaser type deal.
Like I said, my only real qualm with that trailer was that I wish that they would have done something with the costuming. like having that Titan just be like a lady in a t-shirt. Like, you guys couldn't like pay somebody to make shoulder pads or whatever.
That's why they had Eris Morn like hovering in the background out of sight, so you could see her eyes.
Real weird.
You can see Ikora's shoulder, maybe, because
if you put her any closer, it'll be obvious. It's not, you know,
person. That this is like some night vision goggles on a stick or whatever.
Probably just like CGI'd in, like just beyond set or whatever.
Yeah.
What were you gonna say, Kyle? You sounded like you were.
I'd say, so if you go back to even the launch of D1, they used a bunch of live actors for commercials, and then again for D2, and they don't hold up well. They're silly. This wasn't outright silly.
That's right. That's true. Yeah, they're less, because those were more like,
this is no hope for the future.
Those are right. Those are more
video.
Explicitly tonally silly, where it's like,
The D1 ones.
Oh no, you're right. Yeah, the Destiny 1 ones were very self serious, because the D2 ones were like, that's what
the
they were
D2
using
were.
Led Zeppelin and shit.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think I've seen some of the D1 ones. I'm not sure if I've seen any of the D2 ones.
There's a great Japanese commercial live action of a bunch of Guardians dancing with like in-game dance emotes, and that's actually good.
That's okay.
I think I've probably seen parts of that at some point.
I think I've linked that to our
probably
book.
Yeah, right.
that's the best live action Destiny.
There you go.
Is that like I think it's a Zelda 2 trailer?
Was a lot like that.
is that yeah, okay. The Japanese Zelda 2 trailer is a treasure.
Yeah, I know which one I'm talking about.
It's either Zelda 1 or 2. I don't remember exactly which one it was.
Oh,
it was of that era.
3, so now I have to look it up.
Just Link and a bunch of enemies just dancing.
Right. It's you know, right up there with Michael Jackson's Thriller. Same era.
See, video games should be fun. We shouldn't be dicks to people. Let's just have fun.
Just crochet that in a pillow, Lorraine. We shouldn't be dicks to people.
You really shouldn't. Like, just be cool, man.
Mm-hmm. Can you put that on a plate?
We shouldn't be dicks to people in old English font. Lol.
Man, this commercial is wild. I haven't seen this in a long time.
Which, the Destiny one or the Zelda one?
The Zelda one. Oh, there's Link's grandpa in the background.
Is it one, then? Is it OG Zelda?
Three.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I got you.
Oh, so that would be Awakening, right? Or not Awakening.
Right.
To the Past. Is that Link to the Past?
Link
is that the third one?
Yeah, yeah. Link to the Past.
Link to the Link's Awakening. No one ever calls it Link Zelda 4. Whatever. At that point, the water's getting muddy.
Yeah.
Handheld was segregated from console. Never the twain shall meet. In the 90s, at least.
Don't cross this line.
Oh.
I'm still waiting for Seasons and Ages Link's Awakening Switch announcement. I know it's not going to happen, but I would love that, because I do really like those games.
Impossible.
Yeah.
I think it's unlikely to. You know, you have to get Capcom involved.
Right. I have no idea how well that Link's Awakening version sold.
It just
probably
looks cute.
Okay, but
like,
very
I just,
well.
I just want to see those games done nice, because
I mean, Link's Awakening is a great classic game. But I really also like the two Game Boy Color games.
I played
like,
a little
right
bit
there.
I think I do believe I finished Ages, but like my sister and I both got one, kind of like how we do Pokemon games. So I really mostly played Seasons and have extremely fond memories of that game, and would love to see it done in that cutesy style and see all of it like just looking real nice in HD.
If you've got a copy of Seasons, I'd be willing to trade a copy of Ages for it, because I have the box for Seasons. And
you
a
will
copy
not
of Ages.
Get my copy of Seasons. It is
from
mine.
My cold hands.
All right, I'm pretty sure it needs new battery.
Right.
Testing it literally yesterday.
Nice.
God, it's been a while since I've replaced a GBC card.
It's easy.
It is very easy. It's just it's been a while.
Yeah, I've actually never done it.
It's not too bad. Sometimes you might need to like put a little electric tape on the battery to make sure it doesn't.
Yeah,
like,
just so it
little...
doesn't jiggle out of place when you seal it back up. But yeah, it's not
hard. Saved a blue cartridge we found under the floor carpeting of a used van we bought that way.
Nice.
I know I that was a long story, but my dad bought like a secondhand Aerostar at one point. No, so there was it was like a Ziploc bag and it had a copy of Blue and. Was it Q-Billion? I think that's the name of that game. It's a little like mouse-like puzzle game.
Okay.
Right, and it was like equally likely that, you would have found like a little baggie containing like crack cocaine.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right.
That used for minivan. So, you know,
it
you won out, really.
It was 1992, right. I'm pretty sure.
Your dad never told you what else he found.
That's right.
Probably not. I still have that cart somewhere. I had played through it. That was maybe the first time I actually played Red or Blue because I got
gold and silver
and then got yellow after the fact.
Okay.
And then, well, then I played. Did I get Red on my 3DS? I don't remember. I think I got Red when they came out of the virtual console.
Right.
So I played it again there and then accidentally did the one glitch you can use to, like, if you fly or escape when you've made, like, gotten in line of sight with a trainer, like I accidentally activated that in like the rocket tower and had to go start some kind of encounter to make the wild encounter like happen and then caught an Arcanine that way.
Right, that's right, that's how that works. It pulls a random number out based on your actions,
because I got a Mew. I went out of my way to use that to get a Mew and then accidentally did it later and I was like, whoops.
So you could do that with literally any of them.
Fun times.
Indeed.
Video games. They happen.
Yeah. Video games are, you know, but they're good sometimes.
Sometimes.
I was getting spanked in Slay the Spire today. I was trying the daily climb and I just couldn't pull a random deck of 30 cards or whatever to get past the defect.
Oh, is it a random deck day?
Yesterday's was. So it'll have switched. I was doing the one from yesterday. where it was you were the defect, there was a single path. And you like drafted however many cards up front. And I got to the last one at least once and then just got destroyed. And then tried it like two more times and couldn't do it. So I was just like, I'm going to do normal runs. And then I couldn't pull those off either. So I'm good at Slay the Spire.
Yeah, right. It's a good game to just like pop back in on. It's not hard.
I'm really enjoying the daily challenges. Like, I think I'm convinced at this point I may never actually beat the heart because I just don't think I'm good enough at like. Building engines to do that, because like the two times I've gotten there I've gotten murdered.
It's gonna be more of a degenerate learning.
I can't be.
Craig. Card does something fun, it's no good.
Yeah, no,
yeah, you don't pick the fun card.
Absolutely not. The last run that I was doing of I had the Watcher and I was using Judgment like nobody's business. I upgraded it so it was doing 40 and lower was killing things. I killed a boss that way. Because I got him low enough. I was that run, I beat the slime before he split. I was doing good.
I'll take Judgment if I get it early. It's a great game.
And I was doing
up in late act two or later.
I did get early pressure points and was trying that to a decent effect, but I still don't really understand or really like that card. But
I haven't tried it since I did the base run, so I don't know how well that feels.
I can't beat
the blow up all your cards and don't take crappy cards.
I love
basically that.
Crappy cards.
What I learned from Dominion 10 years ago.
That's right. Yeah, many, many moons ago.
Girls just want to have bomb. That's what girls want.
That's a valid way to play also.
Yeah, that's fine.
You just get the bomb. And then
the
you
bomb.
Win.
Mm-hmm.
I won with Omega earlier today.
I took that for the first time.
It's not good. I hate using it, and upgrading it just makes it innate, so you just have to do that first away, like, right away, but it's funny.
I'm a sucker for any card that's like, put one of any three random cards you need.
Oh, same. I love that shit, and Dustin hates it.
It's usually cheap enough.
Yeah.
Right.
If I use machine learning, there's a very high chance of me getting, like, go for the eyes or whatever, or claws. And that's all I want out of those defect decks, Dustin. Claw, 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 claw,
claw. Fair enough. Yeah, Slay the Spire is pretty good. I'm sure we'll talk about that game a little more at some point, but it's pretty neat. We've all been playing it to one degree or another pretty recently. It's pretty good.
I said I dip in for the... I at least check out the daily challenges and then either try them a few times, or I need to get one more rank up on the Watcher to have everything unlocked. I think it's just one more.
Mm-hmm.
I got everything on everybody else now.
More Watcher's real good.
It's too thinky for me.
All right, you do have to like.
I don't like
meticulously
that.
Plan every turn.
No.
And it's like one of the only decks where you kind of have to plan your next turn too, because the stance changes matter when you're carrying over from one action to the other.
Sometimes I'm just wrathed, and then I take too much damage.
You always got to keep a copy of the card to bail you out.
I try to get those like the empty whatevers, fist, head, and whatever the third one is.
The one has retained. You can just hold on to it.
Right. One of those you can keep.
Well, there's like the basic ones. I like the ones that just like do a thing and take you out of your stance.
Right, those are good too.
Because then I can play more Flurry of Blows. Because that's how I play the Watcher. I am a sucker for zero cost cards, Dustin. Doesn't matter the deck, doesn't matter anything. I will put them in many copies.
You have to be careful.
Never.
If you get too many zero cost cards, you'll die.
No.
If you get a nice tight loop of zero cost cards.
Right, yeah. Once you overflow your hands, you're just getting random assortments of cards that maybe don't work so well together.
But then I can play all of them and I feel accomplished.
Four scrapes in my hand and I died.
Yeah, Slay the Spire is pretty good.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think we'll maybe call it a show there, because I do want to talk about that game some more, but I kind of want to have a bigger conversation with, like, I would like to talk to Phil and Wade about, especially Wade, since he played it before any of us did, and has put, presumably.
This is all his fault.
Between him and Phil, they probably have, like, 100 hours easy
total playtime. I think I've got, like,
level 20 yet.
I think I'm at, like, maybe 40-something.
Mm-hmm. But
I haven't checked mine.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't looked it up either. I haven't played much since I beat the heart, but I played a little.
I don't think I'm good enough to beat the heart.
But yeah, we'll save that for another day. So yeah, we'll be looking forward to.
You go beat Riven's heart. We haven't raided in so long. Sad.
I would still try. Like, I would give Master Vogg another shot. Like, I'm not saying I want to grind it or whatever, but I would go back in and just see what it's like on a second attempt. Especially now that we actually know that you don't need to stand on the plates in that first room, which is pretty different than having to do that.
I know Phil and Josh are really interested in that.
The issue you're going to have, Josh wants the title and Phil just wants to turn in his coin.
Yeah. Right. Which, you know,
I have told,
I'm in the middle.
Yeah, I have said, I don't care any at all about the title.
I would go in and try it from the start and just, like, you know, quit after five or six wipes if people are just bored of it. But,
y'all just need to coordinate.
I would certainly give it a shot. But yeah, I'd be down for that. And I'd there'll be a new raid in a couple months.
Woo.
Probably, yeah. I'm guessing like the first or second week of March. Because I don't think the raid will be up the day that Witch Queen drops.
No.
Raid usually gives a
raid. Right. But yeah, probably the first or second week of March, because that game comes out on the 22nd of February.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we'll be playing more Destiny and fucking playing Slay the Spire and talking about nonsense and
being kind to workers
and right.
Hell
and,
yeah.
And unionizing Bungie.
Fuck yeah, unionize everything.
If I say it must be true.
Yay, Dustin.
Order something on Grubhub and not tip the guy who delivers it.
No, Kyle. No. No, you tip him with cash, not through Grubhub, so he gets to keep it. That's what you do.
I wasn't thinking about this at all, but you're right.
That's how you do
actually,
it.
Actually, tipping through GovHub is
tip. Right. Always tip with physical cash.
Yeah.
Just full stop. Always do it.
Mm-hmm.
Also, always tip.
Good lesson.
Good lesson. It's both good.
You got to learn something today, and hopefully that was it. Or that I'm bad at Slay the Spire.
Always tip, support labor, and...
Just be cool, man.
Just be cool, man.
Get vaccinated. Get your boosters if you need them. Wear your goddamn mask.
That's right.
We're not out of the shit yet.
With all that in mind, we will see you next time, Internet. Thank you, Lorraine. Thank you, Kyle, for joining me. We will catch you next time. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye.